Welcome back to Office Hours. I'm David Meltzer. Some people call me Uncle Dave, Grandpa Dave, Dad Dave. This guy calls me Brother Dave.
That's right.
And it's an honor to be even considered to be in the Dhingra family. And Arjun Dhingra, he has built a community and a society called the LFG Society. And we all know what that means. So does Tom Brady. He also is an extraordinary advisor. He helps so many 23-year mortgage advisor, which is not easy to hang around that long, and obviously an entrepreneur. Welcome, one of the Taekwondo champions of the world, Arjun Dhingra.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate you, brother. And yeah, you're the third Dhingra brother.
I love it.
You look like one too, right?
Yeah, most people said Dingaling. He thought it was Dhingra. They're like, that Dingaling is like, oh, he's a Dhingra? Oh, I didn't know we were related. Anyway,
nice.
Let's get serious here. One of the aspects of what you do that I don't think a lot of people realize, I believe, is one of your superpowers is your marketing capability. A lot of people don't think about that, but the mortgage industry changes time, emotion, and value so quickly. And it's regulated, the change. As we increase or decrease the mortgage rate, it automatically changes time, emotion, and value immediately to the trillions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is an indicator how important marketing is, because when time, emotion, and value changes quickly, marketing becomes one of the most important things. And it's probably why you've been able to maintain a business for over 23 years. What are some of the things you've learned about marketing in an industry, career, and job that changes so quickly?
I mean, it was really kind of a crossroads because I was stuck. I was going through the mortgage industry like everybody else was, having rode out the market crash of 08, and then, you know, as the market put itself back together again and figuring it out. But I was doing business as usual, but not really figuring out how to put my name out there in other ways. And I had this moment where I was ready to quit the business. I got stood up for a meeting by a guy that had only been in the business for like a couple years. He canceled me like an Uber driver. He just says, I'm not coming. I showed up to the coffee meeting. I'm like, I'm here early. What can I get you? He goes, I'm not going to make it. Didn't say sorry. Didn't come up with an excuse or BS me or anything. Dismisses me. Then I got yelled at a couple hours later by somebody else in my business. And I just thought, you know what? Maybe the universe is telling me to get out of this thing. I've been at that point in for about 16 years. So I called up my business coach and asked him, hey, I think I need to walk away from this and do something else. I'm tired of getting my shins kicked in. And he says, look, man, I know you're good at what you do, and you know you're good at what you do, and maybe the last few people that you helped know you're good at what you do, but does anybody else? Mm. And I didn't have an answer for that. Other than my martial arts background, if you Googled me, that's all you would find. So he says, I don't know what the answer is, but you're going to have to change that somehow, some way. So literally a few months later, Neil and I went to a Gary Vee event in Miami, and everything just switched. I'd always had a bit of a social media presence, which is what I used for a lot of kind of soft marketing. But then I just threw gas on the fire. And I think, you know, to bring it forward into current times right now, if you paid attention to this election that we just went through, this is not about who voted for who or who won. This was a masterclass in marketing, just watching how it worked, because this election changed how all elections are going to be done. This was the election of podcasts, events, social media, audience hacking, going into enemy territory when normally candidates would avoid going on certain networks. Like, no, I'll go. I'm going to hack that audience. And I'm going to live rent-free in everyone's brain on this side. And then other people doing it. But it's just changed the game. So I'm always fascinated by marketing, and I recognize that it constantly evolves, as it does in my business and every business. But I, you know, to tie it to relevant events, this election also showed how it's evolving as well.
Yeah, you and Patrick Bet David, that's for sure. Definitely understood how that worked.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, the marketing world is fascinating. And obviously, you know, doing mortgages, you got to do something.
Yeah.
The way mortgages went. But what I know about mortgages is most of the time it is the biggest thing that someone's going to spend their money on.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they give you a lot of paperwork and you never read it.
That's right.
how do you clue that in? Because you speak about financial literacy and teaching people, and now that mortgage is the biggest thing, purchase that they're going to make. Mm-hmm. They're relying on you
right.
to tell them what all of that junk means. Mm-hmm. Right. They have no idea what a 30-year fix is.
Right.
They don't know what if there's really a fix or not. They don't know how they lose the house, how they keep the house. How do you integrate the financial literacy component into helping somebody make that purchase and make sure that that purchase stays in their family, that they can maintain their home and do all the things? How does it fit? Because I like the fact that you're talking about financial literacy in this aspect, because I know when I bought my first house, I had no idea what a 30-year fix meant. No idea.
And most people don't.
Right.
I think for, I mean, I'm actually proud of this. I talk more people out of getting a house than I do sometimes actually entering one. Because going through and figuring out someone's life story, why they're actually wanting to, are they doing this just because it's a bandwagon thing? Or because everyone's telling them to do it? How do you spend money? How do you save? Let's look at everything. And I mean, look, I look at thousands of credit reports and financials on a yearly basis. And in California, in the Bay Area, where I see people who, as a combined household, make $300,000-$500,000 a year, which is very good money for an everyday person living in this country, and they're broke. Yeah. They're actually in the red. So they're making this much money and it's all going out, and then they want to buy a house. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the last thing you need to do. You need to be just writing a check to your landlord, calling him up for maintenance, because you're not going to be, if something goes off in your house, you're done. You're not going to be able to replace the roof or do all these things. So the financial literacy part first started, or the passion for it, first started with figuring out, is it even the right move? Yes, it's the American dream and it's touted and everyone should do it and we all aspire to because we've been told that and we saw our parents do it. But it may not be the right thing for you right now. So getting people's financial house in order, figuring out what their habits are, what their relationship with money is, what their conditioning was to it in the household they grew up with. Was it a healthy relationship? Was it not healthy? And also just understanding where people come from. Like, people, to tie this a little bit back to marketing, people are very just diluted in going with a one-size-fits-all approach to marketing. I'll tell you what I mean. If you are marketing to Gen Zers versus millennials, it's not the same thing. Millennials watched their parents lose their homes during the market crash. They don't have a great opinion of real estate, mortgage. They might hear 30-year fixed, like, I don't want anything to do with that. I remember watching my parents lose everything during that time. Gen Z, on the other hand, totally opposite. They've watched their parents ride waves of appreciation and create all kinds of wealth, vacations, college was paid for, whatever, because real estate has done well during their time. So how people market to and approach these people, two totally different frames of references, two different sets of language. But it's important to understand that where everybody comes from is the starting point. And then I try and attack that and figure out, again, what's the relationship with money? What were you exposed to? Because if we're not addressing that, people will continue to make bad decisions. And so it's just kind of a mission to help people kind of stop that and break that pattern. Mm.
Rick, it's funny. You know, I used to tell kids when they want to be a sports agent, I said, hey, let me talk you out of your job of the dreams and let me talk you into a job that will get you to
yes.
the job of your dream. I think it'd be a great marketing ploy for Arjun, right? Let me talk you out of the house of your dreams and put you into one that will get you to a house of your dreams.
Yeah,
something like that. And it's pretty cool.
My next content idea. Remind me about that, Sean.
You got it. Sean, you're on it, man. Go ahead. Just give a little bit of credit to Brother Dave. Yeah,
sure.
Uncle Dave, Grandpa Dave, whatever you want to call me. Go ahead, Rick.
Arjun, what's shaking?
What's up, brother? Hey, good to see you, man.
I'm going
to
make Chad happy. I'm actually going to ask something of you that has to do with your industry. Because we were joking. He's like, do you ever
where'd you get
the
that jacket
like,
from Greece?
Like,
yeah. Did you steal that from
he's
a pink
like,
lady?
He's like over here. Is that over here? He's like, no, I got a question about that.
Yeah, Rick's asking, Arjun, did you get that jacket from Greece? Did you steal it from a pink lady?
He does it with love, but I'm like, yep. Where did that
we'll
question
cut that out,
come
Arjun,
from?
That was,
right. It was off Instagram. It was $40.
All we're black.
Yeah.
Arjun's been on my show. He knows how I am.
Oh, so he knows.
Exactly. Yep. So I watched a movie for the first time ever. Yeah, I know it sounds like
what? Right.
No.
Did you say I watched the movie for the first time ever?
Yeah. Well, on an airplane.
No, a specific movie.
On
right?
YouTube.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah, I'm like, wait, that's the first movie you ever watched? What kind of childhood did you have?
Exactly. Was there no Disney where you were born?
Rough, yeah.
No. Cinderella, Grease. You ever see Grease?
One of my favorites, actually.
I thought
so. The Big Short. See, 12.
Oh, I like the Big Short.
All right, now you bring it back.
I'm not supposed to hit the desk.
You went
went around the block for that, but you got there.
He landed the plane, yeah. A little bit. He landed
That's
it.
That's why people listen to
By the way, don't call me the Big Short or I'll be pissed.
Yeah, right.
that was the, Uncle Dave to you.
Job of pre-framing.
Yeah, exactly.
That was Uncle Dave to you, okay. Not the Big Short.
That's like, marketing, marketing 101 right there.
He's protecting the
pre-framing. It's not like I was having a conversation with my wife.
I was Jim Jack and I was calling the Big Short.
Saw this movie once?
Yeah.
What happened?
I watched this movie.
I love The Last Guest. It gets crazy.
For the first time.
All right, go to the question.
The Big Short.
I resemble that.
Yes. It was incredible seeing the ins and the outs of how this happened. You know, you're talking about millennials and how it was millennials, right? And how they watched their parents lose everything.
Big time.
You know, it was insane how that happened and getting into it. I love movies like that are so accurate.
Mm-hmm. Without a doubt.
We've got a new administration coming in, right? And you've seen a lot of the 23 years, 24 years in the industry, right? Are there any more indicators like that? Obviously, the same types of investments kind of sort of still exist.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm seeing those things kind of like rise to the top in a certain bubble. I mean, dude, it's like my house is, you know, 3X'd over the last few years, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know there's a lot of different reasons for that. But then I also see commercial real estate. There's a lot of private lenders now that are jumping into it, and it scares the fuck out of me when I see where all that money is going right now. What is your take on where we are and where we seem to be going in the next however many years?
Well, you said it, and it's not being talked about enough, the commercial real estate banking crisis. It's not being labeled that, but it's imminent.
Yeah.
It's about to happen. You've got loads of buildings and loans that can't be refinanced. The office dynamic, the commercial dynamic has changed so much in the wake of COVID. People aren't going back to work. These buildings, these leases are worth nothing.
Yeah.
And so they're effectively upside down. You know, you're seeing it like in San Francisco, where I'm at. You're seeing loads of commercial building owners just turning the keys back into the bank. The mall, the big mall, this is a huge story, Westfield Mall down in downtown San Francisco. The owner, the operator of that, turned the keys back in. The mall is a ghost town now.
Wow.
And for an area that was already struggling, this is like another black eye. Unfortunately, on the space. As far as residential real estate, it still comes down to supply and demand. Yes, there were indicators. Hindsight's always 20/20, but if we look back at 06, 07, there were some cracks that were starting to show, and we were also overbuilt. Right now, we have an imbalance of people that have their hand in the air saying, I want a house in America to available homes of 4.5 million. 4.5 million people have their hands in the air for a house, and there's no house for them.
Yeah.
So there's your supply and demand, which is why prices have continued to escalate and likely will. Now, they may not at the same clip because new administration, different economic climate, whatever it is, those kinds of ebbs and flows will have an impact. Real estate is an asset class. Unless there's a major shock to the labor markets to where gluts of homes just hit the market, or if building is somehow sped up, which there's no sign showing that it would be. Mm-mm. Because we have a depleting construction labor force in this country and cost of goods, material, and land are not cheap. So it's not actually in the best incentive or in the best interest of builders to just suddenly put out a bunch of homes. So all these things are my roundabout way of telling you that there likely is, even though things may appear frothy, we're not on the precipice of anything that could be a crash. Now, the commercial banking crisis could spill over into the residential space because capital could start to get very tight. If some bank, there will be some bank failures. It's inevitable. Small,
no
maybe not. There's no Lehman Brothers type situation. Yeah,
it didn't
looming.
Stop with Republic and
no
SVB. No way.
No, it's not stopped there. That's the beginning. And those are actually not small banks at all.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, these are all very large, mid-size or lower tier large banks. So there's going to be more of that. There'll be a ripple effect into the residential space because banks will get tighter. They won't want to lend as much money. They may not be able to. The role of the federal government now coming in with the Trump administration. Are there going to be some bailouts? Will they be acquired? It'll be interesting. But I don't think a residential crisis to the likes of 08 is imminent simply because of that supply and demand issue.
Yeah, sure.
Would you say, let's just say if the plan of what Kamala was trying to do, which was build affordable housing, that would have crumbled the market.
Would have killed it.
It would have killed it.
Yeah.
If they would have built all of these homes.
Would have killed the market.
To where those, 4 million people?
4.5 million.
Those people that's like, hey, I want to buy. And I was thinking, I was like, how many of those people are pre-approved?
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Because in California, you're not talking to nobody if they're not pre-approved. That's you're not right, pre-approved. Right. You're literally, they don't even see your hand.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's right.
So I'm just like, is it possible that had a lot to do? Like that could not. Her plan was like,
never going to work.
Literally, she jumped off the bridge when she said that.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I put out some content on this on both candidates' housing proposals. Kamala's first was that she wanted to put up forth that $25,000 buyer credit towards a down payment. Noble idea
to build a home.
To build a home.
You know, first to buy a home. This was for buyers first. The building part came second. To buy a home. We don't have a demand issue in this country. We have a supply issue. So this isn't going to do anything of actually helping or what the intended consequence was. The unintended consequence is going to make homes more expensive.
Right.
Now we have a bigger problem.
Correct.
Then what she wanted to do was to incentivize builders through tax credits to build more homes. And her plan was, I want to build 3 million homes in 4 years.
That part.
1.1 million homes are currently built a year now. Yeah. That doesn't even keep up with the 1.6 million that are required of demand. Correct. So we're already at, I don't know how it was going to happen.
It was.
I don't know where it was going to come from, to your point.
But regardless, Rick's house go from 3X to like 1X. Mm-hmm. Like literally your value drop. If nobody's buying.
No, if you flood the market with a bunch of inventory.
Exactly.
Everything's going to drop.
It would have been a market killer, without a doubt, Marshall. Absolutely right.
Okay.
I own one of the largest training and performance companies in new home construction. There's nobody that works with more builders than I do. I can tell you, there's no way that works. And what happens now, what we do see is going to happen is those interest rates hit 5.85%. That's the benchmark where the floodgates start to open, where people that are sitting on the fence are now like, okay, that's a reasonable amount of interest rate that I'll pay. As long as it stays as a 6.5%, 7%, it's still going to have some demand, but not the demand that the floodgates are going to open.
Right.
The challenge is to what you said is there's a huge labor shortage, which a lot of people know about, but nobody's looking to solve because nobody's going to try to be a plumber anymore. We're not getting more electricians. We're not getting more framers. So then, okay, everybody comes out to buy. Well, now the cost of goods, cost of building, goes through the roof, which then passed on to the buyers, and now we're in the same supply shortage that we were in a year and a half ago after COVID ended. And the challenge is that nobody's talking about this. Now, my question is not about this. That's just a side rail. I want to have a different conversation with somebody that sees this every day. The two industries that people fear the most in their life, dentists and lenders.
Right.
And the challenge is because in the lending industry, there's so much shame and judgment around people's financial past that the last thing they want to do is be put on trial and judged by decisions they've made in the past financially. And so what they do is they don't call or they don't meet the right financial analyst. And somebody who came from a mother that had nothing and was in those judgment areas as a child, how do you ensure that you liberate people to educate them when they're so afraid of even talking to you? And I don't mean you personally. I'm talking about lenders in general.
Well, I think there has to be a degree of vulnerability.
Yeah.
Right? And understanding that I've either sat where you are sitting or like in my personal case, I can't speak for the entire industry on how they have to do it or how they go about it.
How would you do it?
I do it from a place of that, of just vulnerability and authenticity. I've bought homes. I've won with real estate. I've lost. I've gotten my ass kicked. I lost everything in 08, all the homes I own, many of them were down here in Vegas, right? So I know what that feels like to have the shame, to have to rebuild your credit, to literally have a credit score so bad that if I walked into certain establishments, alarms went off. It was that bad. This guy out of here.
So, and to Marshall's point, in California, if you're not pre-approved, they're not even looking
at you.
They
won't look at you.
I own the largest video secret shop company in the United States. So we send people in secret shoppers with hidden cameras to all the builders across the country. And we watch these shops and we give reports back on how salespeople do and what the culture is like.
Right.
And I'm telling you, in California, if you are not pre-approved,
no chance.
That's the first question they're asking.
The realtor won't even take you to go see a house.
That's exactly right.
If not, okay.
So now you have somebody who there is somebody sitting at this table at the end, whose name is Dave, who lost it all.
Mm-hmm.
And lost that house.
Yeah.
That you had to buy, that you bought for your mother.
Many houses.
Right?
Yep.
And imagine the shame and judgment that you would get
if you're trying to rebuild or don't know how to rebuild. And I think that the backbone right now of home purchases really starts with lenders that understand how to lead with empathy and not judgment and help people with the financial literacy that Marshall's doing, help with the financial literacy that you're doing. I think that's the way back, is to help people understand how to get back when they feel like they've been left behind.
Yes. And, you know, and then also figuring out too, what is the end game? It may not be about the house, and then peeling back some of those layers and understanding people's relationship again with money and maybe what the history is there is seeing, you know, why are you doing this? It's one of the first questions I ask people. Somebody calls, or if they were referred by a financial, I'm like, why do you want to buy a house?
Yeah.
And there's always a moment of silence there, a period of silence. Like, why is he asking me that? I'm serious. Like, why do you want to buy a house? I want to know the reason.
Yeah.
You're doing it just because you think it's what you need to do, or this is the next box to check in life. Maybe that's okay. Maybe it's not.
Yeah.
And through some of this honesty, or just peeling back some layers and asking some of those maybe tougher questions, at least on the surface, we get to a place of figuring out the right answer, or uncovering maybe the shame,
yeah,
or the expectation, the pressure. And this is where I said, I've talked to many people out. I'm like, guys, honestly, like, I don't know if you need to buy a house. You know,
I think most people do it for significance.
Yes.
I think they want to feel significant in their life. And I think buying a home and getting the keys to that home,
yep,
makes them feel like they have a place in this world.
100%.
That's what I think.
Part of the American dream.
Yeah. It is the American dream.
But I think the American dream is the significance. That's what I think it is.
It is
it's a meaning about who I am as an individual.
Yeah.
I got my first house, and I can tell you from somebody who got evicted 3 times before he was 21 years old from apartments that I couldn't afford.
Right.
When somebody gave me the keys to that first house, there was no more significance in the world than I had in that moment. So I think I think that the reality is, you know, helping people through that path, and that's why I love the idea of financial literacy and helping people understand that it's not for some of us, it's for all of us.
Right.
We just have to educate all of us.
And it's a 40% difference in people's net worth to own something versus to not. I mean, it impacts you in the long run, your family, so significantly. It's a game changer. But with that significance comes the pride of knowing that you've done something, because not everyone is going to get the opportunity to invest in companies or take part in private equity, right? Very few people get to do that. But the opportunity to buy a home and dramatically transform the trajectory of a family or the future of the next generation, that people have access to. But it's got to be done the right way.
Yeah. And with your big heart and understanding, and also the math that you've utilized as well as learned throughout the years, this situational knowledge, I call it the dummy tax that all of us is paid, especially in real estate. One of the interesting aspects that I'm seeing in the realm of the significance is the blockchain and crowdfunding aspect of real estate now, that somebody can buy $100 share of $1 billion business and actually get that feeling of significant without taking the timing and risk tolerance of making a bad decision on emotion for logical reasons. Yeah. And I think people like Arjun in the industry, like Marshall, Rick, and you over there, my friend Chad, it's important that we have big hearts and that you have the love in that heart to say, hey, let's actually see, let me talk you out of what you're thinking. Yeah. Because if I'm trying to talk you out of it and you still can talk me into it, then it seems like it probably is a good idea and a good time.
Imagine if one individual came across one of our previous guests, Hannah.
Yep.
And this guy in their life, and how much different that could change the trajectory of their life.
Look, I'm self-admitted, when Marshall and I started working together, he's like, well, let's talk about how you lost everything, Dave. You know, what are you doing today? And I said, well, to be honest, I have a law degree, a business degree. I did very well in school, went to very good schools as well, and had a lot of pressure from my family to do well. But in retrospect, I was financially illiterate, very educated.
Yeah,
very intelligent, people would say. They paid me money to speak and to teach. But ironically, the mistakes that I made were just out of illiteracy, because I didn't have mentors like Marshall Falk or Hannah, who, and especially people like Arjun. And it's an honor, like I said, to be considered part of the society, the LFG Society, his community, his podcast, beyond the marketing capabilities, the ability to bring the best out of you. He's a world champion, so he understands performance as well.
Yeah.
And I think that whole package of the Dingras, especially Arjun, is why we need more talent like that in the space to help us through the next 20 years, but also to help us here on office hours. Arjun Dingra, he is the founder of LFG Society, LFG Fellows, here on office hours.